This is Your Working Life, a podcast that provides you with tools, inspiration, and resources so you can enjoy your career and love your life. I'm Caroline Dowd Higgins. I'm a speaker, an author, and an executive coach, and today I am delighted to welcome Dr. Maureen Dunn to the show. Dr. Dunn is a cognitive scientist, a neurodiversity expert, a global keynote speaker, board director, and a business leader with over two decades of experience helping organizations build thriving cultures. Dr. Dunn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's great to be here.
You know, I am so excited that we are going to unpack this very complex and important topic, which is neurodivergence. And if you would be so kind, Maureen, is to really help this global audience first understand, what is it? I think some of us have an idea, but there's really so much to honor here. And I want to pass the baton to you as the expert.
Absolutely. Yeah. So neurodiversity, it's a term that was coined back in the late 1990s by an Australian sociologist named Judy Singer. And the idea, you know, is that we can look at, and I'll explain, you know, what falls under the neurodiversity umbrella in a minute, but the idea is that we can think about neurodivergence in a way that's similar to like biodiversity, that, you know, we're not necessarily looking at it as, okay, you know, there's normal people and there's deficient people, but that there is this broad range of rich cognitive diversity that fits within the expected variation for what it means to be human, for brain differences, for different ways of learning and perceiving.
And I really appreciate the term that I read in your book, the brain difference. So could you elaborate a little more? You mentioned in the book autism, ADHD, dyslexia, and others. Just again, to help this audience really understand what we're talking about.
Absolutely. So, and neurodiversity, it's basically this concept that, you know, we're all human and there's this variation in the way the brain works. But people that identify as neurodivergent or neurodistinct generally have either been diagnosed or identify strongly with a cognitive typology such as autism, ADHD, dyslexia, dyspraxia, synesthesia. Basically, the idea is any typology where the brain works differently than what has been perceived as being neurotypical, one would consider themselves neurodivergent. And there's, you know, debate going on and conversations being had about you know, how broad that umbrella is. Some people consider mental health conditions as well part of that. But there's also just, I think the really important thing is to see that we're all human beings, right? And that everybody has different challenges and weaknesses, and that focusing on our strengths is really important.
Maureen, in my experience, I have friends who have had their younger kids, you know, the tweens and the teens, diagnosed, and they've been brought to specialists and experts to help unpack their cognitive typology. But clearly, I think there may be a generation of adults that have been undiagnosed because they just didn't have the wherewithal or the resources to recognize what their unique situation is. Is that accurate or is that just my lens?
No, for sure. I mean, so I've been doing this for a long time, and it's been actually pretty fascinating to see how much has changed, say, over the last, you know, 20 plus years. But then, you know, again, how much more we have to do as well. But yeah, I think there's so much more public awareness now. There's still, you know, a lot more training that needs to be done, especially in corporations and organizations. But
if we go back, you know, 20, 30 years, especially girls, were very likely to be being identified early on in the school systems. It was a much harder situation in terms of just a lot of kids were there wasn't enough public awareness, I think. So there were a lot of kids that did need support, but weren't being identified early on. And so that's why I think now we're seeing a lot of people that are being diagnosed later in life.
Yeah. And does it evolve? You know, does a neurodivergent cognitive typology, I'm trying to really honor your incredible language here, does it change from, for example, from when you might be a teenager to an adult entering the workforce? Does your behavior change, for example?
Well, sure. I mean, any human being or brain, I mean, there's just a reality of neuroplasticity and how we spend our time. At the same time, I would just say at the same time that a lot of the typologies we're talking about, there's very strong traits that aren't just cognitive traits, but for many people, it's their identity, and they can't. It's not really possible to separate those traits from who they are as a person. So there's that perspective to also understand.
Got it. So you write so beautifully in your book about how we're struggling to handle and honor neurodivergent people in the workplace. How has the workplace traditionally worked around and with neurodivergent people? Because I think there's a great opportunity to improve here. But if you can set a baseline to help this audience understand, we can take it from there.
Yeah. And so in my book, I do talk a lot about different types of unconscious cognitive biases, because I do think there's a lot of well-intentioned people that still succumb to some of these type of bias. I mean, we all are just programmed, right, to take these sort of cognitive shortcuts, and so it takes a lot of effort to reverse that. And one of the biggest challenges that I see is that there is still a lot of biases that come into play. Making these hiring decisions, making advancement decisions, for sure. There was a study that came out in the UK back in, I think, 2020 from the Institute of Leadership and Management, where 50% of UK employers openly admitted they would not hire a neurodivergent job seeker. So there's still a lot of misunderstandings, misinformation, and also just not really truly understanding the nuance and the rich diversity that's out there. And I think it's the examples that a lot of employers and just people in the general public have been exposed to in terms of particular typologies like autistic or ADHD or dyslexic, they're so limited that I think what's also really important is there's a lot of actually even, leaders out there that I know that are neurodivergent but reluctant to disclose. And I think the more that it's comfortable and safe to do so, the more people will realize, it'll start challenging these stereotypes and these different, unconscious biases because the brain is sort of wired in a way to the familiarity bias where, just what your the information that you're that's easiest to psychologically conjure up in mind is going to have a disproportionate a stronger impression, right? And so I think that the more that people who sort of shatter some of those stereotypes, right, I think that's also something that's really helpful for employers to see and understand the broad you know, and rich diversity that's out there in neurodiversity, including neurodivergent leaders. A lot of the positions that are still available that focus on recruiting neurodivergent people tend to be, contributor roles where there's maybe not that much advancement potential, unfortunately.
Well, and I picked up on that in your book. You reference a study about a large number of CEOs and startup founders who have ADHD and dyslexia, for example, and they're wildly successful, which is wonderful because they're dispelling those myths, right? And they're breaking through the stigma.
Yeah.
But I'd love for you to share some of the unique skills that neurodivergent people bring to the table that may be unknown, right? Let's open up the ideas here so people can really gain clarity about the value that these incredible humans bring to the workforce.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, as you know, Richard Branson, he's been an incredible advocate. He's dyslexic and he's been very public about how his dyslexia, he feels, has been a tremendous asset, right, to his creativity, to his success as an entrepreneur. And his big picture thinking, connecting the dots, seeing things that other people miss. And so that's not uncommon. There's a lot of research on, so if we got to drill down on this, you know, there's specific typologies I would say that all neurodivergent people, so I go come back to this concept that I brought up in the past for a number of keynotes called neurodiversification, where in general, you know, neurodivergent people, they're uncorrelated with other members of the group. So they're coming from, they're problem solving and they're coming from angles that are generally uncorrelated with other members of the group. And so there's, non-traditional solution pathways that can be accessed. There's creativity, there's lateral thinking, there's visual spatial thinking, there's pattern thinking, there's first person, approach to solving problems. There's reverse engineering techniques. And so, and I get into a lot of this more specifically in my book and examples, and there's even drawings and case studies. I think there's differences, you know, between the typologies, but there's also more documented overlap than has been previously assumed as well. Like, especially there's a lot more women being diagnosed with both autism and ADHD. And some of those women, you know, defy stereotypes. A lot of, you know, I would say most of them do. And because they don't necessarily fit into any of the stereotypical sort of autistic, what we think about for autism and what we think about for ADHD, but the blend of those characteristics and this sort of richness of neurodivergence that we see is very unique. And I think one of the things I talk a lot about too is, especially for autistic people, there's a lot of research about a strong resistance to groupthink, and that in itself is really valuable for a company or an organization, including boards of directors, right? Where sometimes, you know, there's a lot of research I cite, you know, from the business literature too and cognitive science literature about, you know, studies where where people can be, unfortunately, you know, in a group, very influenced by a vocal majority sort of leader in the group, and that the a lot of the experience and expertise and wisdom that each individual member has within that group sometimes then doesn't get access. There's like these hidden profiles that don't become verbalized or given a voice, and that's you know, led to some of the most expensive business and government failures in history. And if neurodivergent people are added to that equation and given voice, then you're having people that, you know, maybe coming at some of these problems from a different angle, maybe be able to see things differently, maybe be less concerned about, you know, their social status and be able to speak up. And that in itself is extremely valuable, just to have diversity of thought, have diversity of perceptual, cognitive, analytical abilities included, right, in any group of people that are solving problems.
Love that. Maureen, we'll be right back after a quick break. I'd like to tell you about a special offer. If you want to bring your podcast to life or up your podcast game, you can get up to 2 months of free podcasting service with Libsyn using my special code CDHWORK. The Libsyn team will get your podcast on Apple and Spotify and give you access to critical stats and all the support you need to sound your best and grow your show. Use my special code CDHWORK. Hiring the right speaker for your event is a tremendous responsibility. You need a speaker who will work within your budget and engage your audience. Whether you're looking to retain or grow top talent, create a healthy workplace culture, or prevent burnout in your organization, I can create customized content to help you recharge, reignite, or reinvent your career. Let's talk about how I can help you achieve your special event goals. Connect with me at CarolineDowdHiggins.com. Maureen, one of the things that I picked up in the book, a thread that I want to pull, you write about the double empathy problem and how we bridge the gap between neurotypical and neurodivergent individuals. Say more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's really fascinating framework. I was doing my doctorate in the cognitive sciences before that framework was articulated. And so the idea was, if we go back, say, 30, 40 years, autism in particular was almost accepted as where there was this, mind blind deficit type of paradigm that was, central to autism. And so it colored the way that a lot of people thought about autism, which extended to, ideas about empathy and the extent to which, autistic people can relate with other people. And so the double empathy problem is really fascinating because it puts all that, the sort of old paradigm into question. And the idea is that in the evidence, so far suggests really strongly, and this has been my experience as well, both as a professional and lived experience, is that, a lot of the communication and empathy barriers completely go away when there's shared experiences to draw upon. And so what was once thought of as like an inherent deficit of autistic people could be recast as just the kind of empathy and communication bridges that need to happen. Like if, when you're traveling in a foreign country and you're fully aware that there may not be as much common ground as, if you're in your home country and you make an effort to bridge those gaps. And so, so the research shows that like autistic people are, the communication gaps go away completely when autistic people are interacting with other autistic people. And there's this, shared knowledge and experiences to draw upon, including, similar sensory tendencies, similar challenges in terms of maybe not always, feeling like they're being properly misunderstood by other people, employment challenges, all sorts of nuances. And also just autistic people are, more forgiving, I think. If fit in perfectly with some sort of social norm or maybe makes a mistake right there. And so the idea there is that actually neurotypical people are just as bad at intuiting the mental states and having empathy with autistic people as autistic people can be with neurotypical people. And what it's really then about is that it's about, you know, it's not a deficiency in empathy as much as that there's the shared experiences matter. And the more that we can do to foster this sort of cross empathy, you know, around neurotypes, like there's, you know, bridging those shared experiences, of communication gaps, coming from a perspective that we're all valuable and reasonable people, and we would prefer to live in a universe where everybody is included and is thriving, and you know have an empathy structure in place where we're all working hard to bridge those gaps, and realizing that there may be just very different experiences that cause us to make assumptions about other people that may or may not be true. And, you know, for example, neurotypical people often have an experience when they're interacting with autistic people thinking that, you know, they're not very funny, or they're, you know, because there may be a lack of enthusiasm with small talk, that they're rude. You know, just because that's not the experience they have with other neurotypical people, but there's a whole way of interacting, a whole way of humor. There's a whole way seeing the way the autistic communication and seeing and understanding it from a very different perspective. And the more that we can kind of bridge those gaps and have more shared experiences, I think the more we could really work well in groups and build these incredible teams in our organizations where we're taking, we're really complementing each other's talents and skills and abilities. And I also think that's where organizations and will be the most competitive.
You know, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, and you write about it so eloquently, but for those who have not yet read the book, what I'm gleaning is that this is so much more than a DEIB initiative, right? All organizations are saying, okay, we want cognitive diversity. We're looking at diversity through many different lenses. I hope they're also honoring neurodiversity there, or neurodivergence there. I'm sure some are and some aren't. But you talk about how we need to have a paradigm shift. This is a values-driven approach. So I'd love to hear you elaborate on that.
Yeah, I mean, for sure. So a lot of what I talk about in the book, too, is that there's been a focus, I think, in the past on these sort of like check the box approaches, right? Like almost like a separate pathway to neurodiversity at work. And you know, I think that where organizations are going to get the most value, and where it's going to be a real game changer for neurodivergent people in terms of meaningful employment opportunities, is when organizations can commit to that deeper values-driven approach, where they're not, you know, hiring some consultants on the side, or they're not just doing a pilot, right? That's sort of separate from their organizational culture, which, you know, was a good start. But where we're at now, it's, you know, it's so important that organizations learn to do that deeper work, learn to develop, you know, an organizational culture that truly values all kinds of minds. And, you know, and that's going to be, in my opinion, really critical too, when we look at the economic climate we have in front of us. You know, there's a structural labor shortage. Things are changing so fast with, this is the first time in history where this level of cognitive work is going to be taken over by machines and AI, and so many businesses, they're so focused on, okay, well, how do we integrate our technology systems and our AI capabilities in the future? But they're failing to understand that what's equally as important is their human resources. And you know, I think this should fit under the DEI framework, but it goes way beyond that. It's, you know, this is talent acquisition. This is, you know, properly assessing and understanding neurodivergent talent and making sure that our interview processes and other systems that are in place are not inadvertently blocking a pathway, right, where that talent will be hired and where they're supported in a way where they can thrive and where the whole organization can thrive. Because when there's a value, when the leaders of an organization and everybody learns to truly value cognitive diversity and understand it on this deeper values-driven approach level, that's when I think, you know, the conditions are ripe for innovation. There's enough psychological safety where people feel like they can take risks, you know, they can bring up ideas that are unconventional, and there's not a penalty, right, for being different. And I think that is that building those kind of cultures are going to be and have always been just absolutely essential to getting the most productivity out of your entire workforce.
Dr. Maureen Dunn, I have learned so much from you today. I'm deeply grateful that you joined me on the show. Your incredible new book is called The Neurodiversity Edge, The Essential Guide to Embracing Autism, ADHD, Dyslexia, and Other Neurological Differences for Any Organization. And it's available on Amazon and all major book retailers. But Maureen, would you be so kind as to help these global followers understand how they can connect with you after the show?
Absolutely. So I'm on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So you can find me and connect with me or follow me on LinkedIn. My book is being released in the USA and globally on March 12th. It's being released a little bit earlier in the UK. You can check out the book website as well, which is www.theneurodiversityedge.org.
Brilliant. Maureen, I wish you continued success. And as I said, what a joy to have you on the show.
Thank you. Yeah, I really, really enjoyed talking to you. This was great.
Thank you, Maureen. Your Working Life is now available on all major podcast platforms. And I want to give a special shout out to my extraordinary podcast colleagues, Laura Deck, Executive Director of Publicity and Communications, and Claire McInerney, Executive Producer. Thank you for making this show awesome for our global audience. We now have listeners in 34 countries. I'm Caroline Dowd-Higgins. Thanks for listening.